It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon and be able to share some of our recent findings with you and the members of this council. As Charlie stated, our group has for a number of years been conducting various on-farm field scale studies as well as some conventional small plot studies throughout some of the major cotton producing areas in Louisiana for the purpose of developing potential site-specific nematode management studies. For the purpose of this paper, I'm going to talk about the same fields that Charlie mentioned, but take another direction based on some of the soil properties that he mentioned. We're going to focus on fields here in Tensaw Parish, Louisiana, the particular fields being very close to St. Joseph, Louisiana, right next to the Mississippi River. These two fields are farmed by Panola Planting Company in the Mississippi River alluvial soil area. And the reason we chose these two fields is because thanks to the cooperation of the producer, we have been able to acquire 3 years of data because they were willing to modify their rotation to let us be able to do this research. Charlie mentioned, this is just a brief overview on the initial phase of our study. We mapped these fields with the Veris 3100 mapping cart to acquire electrical conductivity data, process this data, broke it up into zones, with this showing the lightest textured soil in the field in the lowest colors, in the whitest colors, varying on up to the darker reds, which are the heavier textures. We also, using GIS, developed some areas that we're calling sampling transects so that we would have something by which to collect data during the course of this study relative to the different predominant soil zones in these fields. These fields had rows, strips of telon applied all 3 years in the spring, 12-row strips. They were harvested with the John Deere picker with a Green Star 2 yield monitoring system. We crunched the numbers using the ARS yield editor and SS toolbox. And briefly, our results were that we found, which was we thought was expected, was that cotton yield response to nematicides, such as telon, was not the same across our different soil texture zones as delineated by EC. Our yield responses were observed in only the lower EC or the lighter textured soils. As Charlie mentioned, what we did not expect to find, our unexpected results, is that we could obtain optimum yields on some soils in spite of the presence of nematode populations previously considered to be extremely damaging. We look at our 3-year mean cotton yield in these fields, having our lint yield on the y-axis with each of our soil zones represented with their alphanumeric designation in order of increasing total sand content. We see that in our first three soil zones, we got zero response in 3 years. In our remaining soil zones, we were very consistent. Significant responses 3 out of 3 years in three of these zones. The number of pounds is the lint response. And the other zone, we got responses 2 out of 3 years. But the year that we missed a significant response, we still had 90 pounds, which would have paid for the material. So we would not have lost the money had we applied telon in this zone. The other reason we think we were a little off in that year, that was the year the hurricanes blew our cotton around pretty good. So we have several zones that we're not getting response and zones that we're getting a very consistent response. Has nothing to do with populations of root knot. In blue, you'll see our root knot populations was taken in the fall of 2005. They're listed at the bottom. If we look at our three non-responsive soils, we're making 1,600, 1,200, 1,100, and 1,200 pounds of lint per acre and not getting any response from our nematicide, even though our populations have consistently been in 4 and 5 digits throughout the period of this study. So we have what we're calling non-responsive soils that are not responding, even though nematodes are present, and responsive soils, where we're getting very consistent yield responses. The question is why? If we want to be able to write a prescription for our nematicide, obviously we would have over-applied nematicides on several of these soils in these fields. Looking at other components of the potential interactions going on in the field. During the course of this study, we observed, as Charlie mentioned, that the areas of responsive soil and non-responsive soil were best represented by the deep electrical conductivity rather than the shallow. And that from random deeper samples, we found that yield response was more related to soil texture through the profile than nematode populations in the surface texture alone. So our objective here was to characterize the soil profile texture as well as nutrient properties that are potentially impacting or influencing the impact of root knot nematodes on cotton yield to a depth of 24 inches on these non-responsive and responsive soils. What's the difference in the soils? Our methods were very simple. In August, we sampled these soil zones to a depth of 24 inches using a hydraulic probe. These cores were divided into 6-inch partitions. Samples were replicated 4 times per zone. We used our GPS data, historical data, to ensure that our samples were taken into check plots so that we would not introduce a variability from previous telon applications. We did a nematode population analysis, which Charlie reported on. We also did a particle size analysis for soil texture and a soil nutrient analysis. So the results for our soil texture issues, if we look at the sand content from the surface 6 inches, as shown in this chart, with the pounds of sand per 100 pounds of dry soil on the y-axis, with our soil zones represented by our alphanumeric designations in order of increasing sand content, we see we have our non-responsive soils and our responsive soils, and some of these soils have no significant differences in sand content in the upper 6 inches. But if we look at the total sand content through the profile to our total 24-inch depth, what we find is a very clear break. In our non-responsive soils, we have less sand in the subsurface horizons, but the total sand throughout the soil profile, we have a much more consistent distribution of sands through these responsive soils related to possibly, or the cause reason for seeing the higher nematode populations all the way down to 24 inches. Conversely, if we look at the clay content, again, we get a very clear breakout, nothing doing with the top 6 inches, but when we look at our total clay content by soil depth, we have much more clay in the subsoil in our non-responsive soils than in the responsive soils. Charlie showed these pictures before. I'm just taking a different tack, our responsive soil versus our non-responsive soil. These, we have not done any made any attempt to pulverize these. These are as they came out of the cores, out of the bags. The only mixing they got was in transport. I'm just going to put these up so I can say something about the differences. For all of the people from Georgia, Alabama, and other areas of the country, we're talking about alluvial soils. This clay, the silty clay loam at 6 to 12 inches, was in recent geological time probably somebody else's topsoil. It's not the result of eons of differentiation and soil profile development and collection of clay by weathering and movement down into a subsoil. This is pretty good stuff. And in all probability, this clay at the 6 to 12 inches in these fields within my lifetime was topsoil. The sand was moved here either by tillage, operation of tillage equipment, land planes, or land grading. So this is pretty good clay in these subsoils. Results from our nutrient issues, we've also seen as we go through being called out to numerous problem areas in fields around Louisiana, that every time there is some really severe nematode injury, such as this root knot stunning, we also find that there's always some kind of nutrient imbalance or problem in these areas. In this case, the first thing I saw was that, hey, might be root knot here, but we've got sulfur and zinc deficiencies. This was confirmed by tissue analysis. So we wanted to look at some of the nutrients through the soil profile to look at the total pool, the total nutrient pool for that root system that cotton plant might be able to live on, to see if this is giving us some of the reason for the differences between our responsive and non-responsive soils. Here we have our soil potassium by depth. On our Y, we're looking at the total pounds measured, which is simply taking the old aquifera slice, 2 million pounds, parts per million times 2, you can see that in our non-responsive soils, our total soil potassium that might be available to a root system is considerably higher in the non-responsive soils than it is in the responsive soils, with a lot of that coming in the deeper horizons. What about soil zinc? Same relationship. Total number of pounds, our non-responsive soils, more zinc available to the plant throughout the soil profile than is just evident in the top 6. And our responsive soils, lower zinc content in the total soil profile for all the different soils that we work with. We look at soil sulfur, not quite as distinct as a breakout or relationship here, here are our non-responsive soils, and here are our responsive soils. But the types of soils where we see these injuries, the deep sands, are very subject to sulfur deficiencies because the sulfur is so easily leached out of the profile if there is no clay layer or clay surface soil, subsurface soil, to trap this sulfur and keep it from being leached out. We're also not getting the sulfur from environmental reasons or from rainfall the way we used to get it. We've seen a lot of sulfur issues in severe injury areas across the state. Soil phosphorus is about the only nutrient that we looked at that didn't break out very cleanly insofar as our non-responsive soils and our responsive soils. Don't know exactly why. I think this data is a little bit inconclusive, but if we're looking at plants whose ability to take up nutrients is impaired with an impaired root system, and the soils are already teetering on the brink of marginal nutrient status, it's very, very easy for those injured root systems to push you over the ledge. So our conclusions were that for the development of site-specific nematode management plans on our Mississippi River soils, we really have to consider factors other than nematode populations alone. Soil texture, including soil texture throughout the profile, must be considered. And the use of deep values for the bulk soil electrical conductivity may be feasible for developing these site-specific nematode management plans. One thing is certain. If a producer is going to go out and invest in a nematicide such as Telone, hoping to revive areas of his field where he's seen yield decreases over the years, and he puts out the Telone, and the pH in those areas is 4.8, the potassium level is 100 parts per million, and the sulfur is 2 parts per million, he's going to be disappointed. He could put out 10 gallons an acre and kill every nematode in the profile, but you still can't get optimal yields unless you take into consideration all of the agronomic factors that also might be impacting these areas. With that, I'll say thank you and ask if there are any questions.
We have time for one quick question. Terry?
Would it be correct maybe to characterize any stress events would be a better predictor than just nematode population density in nutrients, or maybe an NDVI might be a nice predictor?
Every layer of data that a farmer has access to is definitely a plus. We have some producers who are getting imagery through InTime. They also have their yield maps and their EC data, and then they can take a look at the low producing areas that occur in light textured soils that have stress during the summertime. But our 3 years of data, these were 3 years that were very different environmentally. The first year was a very much above average rainfall year. We still got very high responses. The second year was very dry in the spring. The third year was about average, but our yield increases and response was very consistent across these three different environmental years. But I think that the presence of the nematodes down to 24 inches is definitely something that's going on, and which also brings to bear the fact that if we're going to use Telone or some other higher end nematicide to give us a better environment in our top 12 inches, and the soil fertility from 12 inches down is very poor, we had better do a good job of making sure that we have optimum soil fertility in the area where the root system is not going to be compromised.
All right. Thank you very much, Maurice.